Daniel 4, Nebuchadnezzar's dream of a tree. To the peoples, nations, and men of every language who live in all the world, may you prosper greatly. It is my pleasure to tell you about the miraculous signs and wonders that the Most High God has performed for me. How great are his signs, how mighty his wonders. His kingdom is an eternal kingdom. His dominion endures from generation to generation. I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at home in my palace, contented and prosperous. I had a dream that made me afraid. As I was lying in my bed, the images and visions that passed through my mind terrified me. So I commanded that all the wise men of Babylon be brought before me to interpret the dream for me. When the magicians, enchanters, astrologers, and diviners came, I told them the dream, but they could not interpret it for me. Finally, Daniel came into my presence, and I told him the dream. He is called Belshazzar, after the name of my God, and the spirit of the holy gods is in him. I said, Belshazzar, chief of the magicians, I know that the spirit of the holy gods is in you, and no mystery is too difficult for you. Here is my dream. Interpret it for me. These are the visions I saw while lying in my bed. I looked, and there before me stood a tree in the middle of the land. Its height was enormous. The tree grew large and strong, and its top touched the sky. It was visible to the ends of the earth. Its leaves were beautiful, its fruit abundant, and on it was food for all. Under it, the beasts of the field found shelter, and the birds of the air lived in its branches. From it, every creature was fed. In the visions I saw while lying in my bed, I looked, and there before me was a messenger, a holy one, coming down from heaven. He called in a loud voice, "Cut down the tree and trim off its branches, strip off its leaves and scatter its fruit. Let the animals flee from under it and the birds from its branches. But let the stump and its roots, bound with iron and bronze, remain in the ground, in the grass of the field. Let him be drenched with the dew of heaven, and let him live with the animals among the plants of the earth. Let his mind be changed from that of a man, and let him be given the mind of an animal, till seven times pass by for him. The decision is announced by messengers. The Holy One declares the verdict, so that the living may know that the Most High is sovereign over the kingdoms of men and gives them to anyone he wishes and sets over them the lowliest of men."
Saying, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. Heard that? As I was growing up, all throughout my rugby league, rugby union playing years, coaches and then the men in my family would often say that to me all the time, every week. The bigger they are, the harder they fall. I saw the power of that when we were in the under-15s and we were playing Kutara in Newcastle, and the centre was renowned. He stood 6'4". We were 15. He stood 6'4", or 1.93 metres. He ran like the wind. He was a representative player. He was massive. Our plan was to, every time he got the ball in the first 10 minutes, just bury him in the ground. Now, you have to understand that I was not really part of this because I've not always been this big. If I was this big when I was 15, I might have had a crack at it. This was the job for the front row forwards, the second rows, the lock and the centres. Every time this giant man who could run like the wind, played representative football, got anywhere near the football, three or four of our guys would just tackle him and pummel him into the ground for 10 minutes. In the 11th minute, he stopped playing. He was on the field, but his heart had given up. He did not want to play. The bigger they are, the harder they fall. We see this on an international scale when we turn to Daniel chapter 4. By the time we get to chapter 4, King Nebuchadnezzar is no longer a rising power. He is the power. He is the king of the world. And he says to us in Daniel chapter 4, verse 4, I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at home in my palace, contented and prosperous, and I had a dream. But within 12 months of him saying that, we read in Daniel chapter 4 and verse 33 that he was living in the forest, eating grass like a cow, drenched with the dew of heaven. His hair was long like the feathers of an eagle, and his fingernails were corkscrew inches long like the talons of a bird. It's a dramatic fall. And his fall comes not because of his might so much as his pride. He is the embodiment of an old proverb, pride comes before a fall. And we see it a little bit if we go back to Daniel 4, verse 4. I was contented, I was prosperous, I had a dream. And the opening scene of his dream is breathtaking. If you have a look at verse 10 with me. His dream was, there stood in the middle of the land this massive tree. It was enormous. It grew large and strong, and its top touched the sky. It was visible to the ends of the earth. Its leaves were beautiful, its fruit abundant, and on it was food for all. Under it, beasts of the field took shelter, and the birds of the air lived in its branches. There was food for every creature on the planet. It sounds very much like the Garden of Eden. Abundance, food, shelter for all. And Daniel, when he's interpreting the dream, says in verse 22, you, O king, are the dream. You have become great and strong. Your greatness has grown until it reaches the sky, and your dominion extends to the furthest parts of the earth. But Nebuchadnezzar says in verse 5, as the visions passed by me, I was terrified. Terrified. And you get a feel for it in what happens next in the dream. Look at verse 13. In the visions I saw while lying on my bed, I looked, and there before me was a messenger, a holy one. Some translators say a watcher, a sentinel, came down from heaven. He called in a loud voice, cut down that tree, trim off its branches, strip off its leaves, scatter its fruit, let the animals flee from underneath it and the birds from its branches. Cut it down. Remember, Nebuchadnezzar is the tree. It's no wonder he is terrified. He is about to be felled like a massive tree in the forest because of his pride. And we get to see the pride beginning to ooze out of Nebuchadnezzar from the very beginning of his dream. You remember he said in verse 10, I saw a tree that stood in the center of the land. He saw himself as the central figure in his world. Verse 11, it's a tree that dared to touch the sky. And right there, from the plains of Shinar, from prehistoric Babylon, at that moment we hear the chilling echo of Nebuchadnezzar's ancestors who once said in Genesis chapter 11, come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that touches the sky so that we may make a name for ourselves. We want to be the center of our world. And Daniel turned the spotlight up on that thought in verse 22 where he said, you have become strong and your greatness has grown and it touches the sky. Friends, this is blood-chilling. To touch the sky in the Old Testament is to say, God, we are like you and we want to do life on our own terms without you. To touch the sky in 21st century language is to say, I am special. I am important. I am the center of my world and I do not need anybody else. I am God. It's a pride thing. To be sure, Nebuchadnezzar's tree was lush and abundant with enough food and shelter for all. It looked a whole lot like Eden again, but pride twists and distorts the human heart until the world revolves around me and it blinds my heart to the needs of those around me, which is what Daniel picks up ever so subtly in verse 27, where he says, "O King, hear my advice. Renounce your sins by doing what is right and your wickedness by being kind to the oppressed." Nebuchadnezzar had forgotten that he'd been given so much in order to take care of the oppressed, the poor, and the needy. I mean, why would you show mercy to the needy anyway? Those who live in poverty, the poor, it's due to their laziness, isn't it? And if the widow and the single mum didn't waste their money on life's luxuries or buying takeaway, then they would be able to care for their children, wouldn't they? Nebuchadnezzar had forgotten what his first dream revealed. His wealth, his power, his position, his rule, these were gifts from God to take care of the poor. But when you forget the extraordinary, extravagant generosity of God as you enjoy all that you have made, then pride takes root and a human heart is darkened. And so we read in verse 29, 12 months after the dream had been revealed, shared, and interpreted, 12 months later, Nebuchadnezzar was walking on the roof of his royal palace in Babylon. From his roof, he could see the famous Ishtar Gate that he had built on the extreme outer wall. This gate stands 12 meters tall. This is the gate. It now resides in Istanbul's museum in Turkey. It stands 12 meters tall. The wall on which it hung was 8 meters thick, large enough for a chariot to do laps on its 27 kilometers around Babylon. From his roof, he could see the famous Hanging Gardens, which he had constructed for his wife Emetus so that she could enjoy a taste of her native land, Media, because she had left Media to live in the flatlands of Babylonia. And when translated, this means he also would be happy because happy wife. And so as he surveyed his magnificent city, he said in verse 30, "Is not this the great Babylon I have built as the royal residence by my power and for the glory of my majesty?" And right there, a king given so much touched the sky and declared, "I am special. I am the center of my world. I am God." And then verse 31 says, while those words were still on his lips, a voice from heaven said, This is what is decreed for you, King Nebuchadnezzar. Your royal authority has been taken away from you. You will be driven out to live away from people with wild animals. You will eat grass like a cow, and your fingernails will grow long like the talons of a bird. You have lost everything. Friends, I have to tell you that this passage and sitting with it this week has disturbed me deeply. Not because of what Daniel 4 says on its own, and not because this pattern is repeated over and over again. You can read God saying the same thing to Egypt and Edom, Assyria, Elam, Tyre, and Sidon. We see Jesus echo it in a parable he told one day in Luke chapter 12, where a man, through no effort on his part, all of a sudden didn't grow 100 pineapples, he grew 1,000 pineapples. And he had a problem at that point. So he says in Luke 12, "What will I do? I know what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store my surplus grain. And I will say to myself, you have laid up plenty for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry." And then Jesus goes on and says, "God said to this man, you fool, This night your life is demanded of you. Then who will get what you've prepared for yourself? And if that's not disturbing enough, then God, Jesus says, this is how it will be with anyone who stores up things for themselves and is not rich towards God. If only these accounts were confined to the pages of the Bible, to a time past, then maybe the disturbance I experienced during the week would have been over by today. But we live in a time not with one Nebuchadnezzar or with two who may or may not wear red ties. We live in an era with billions and billions of Nebuchadnezzars. People who each believe they are special, they are perfect, and they are the gods of their world. And the world needs to know about them, even if airbrushed and filtered. The world must know. Let me tell you about CJ, a girl I read about, a young woman I read about during the week. She will often spend up to 4 a.m. in the morning airbrushing, filtering photos of herself that she might post just the very best on Facebook and Instagram, along with tags like hypnotizing, mesmerizing me. She has a 1 terabyte hard drive. I have no idea how much that stores. 1 terabyte of hard drive plus $70 a month iCloud account. Do you know what's stored on those things? Herself. Photos of herself. And she will use her iPhone to put her makeup on because a mirror is just too real. I know this is the air we breathe. We are so enamored with self. Someone has developed a soap to replace palm olive soap, goat's milk soap, and Dove bars. You can now shower and bathe yourself with self, human soap. You'll be able to buy this next year at the Adelaide Festival. You want to know what it's made from? Liposuctioned human fat. Maybe, just maybe, maybe the focus on self is not as good as we have been led to believe. And if only the church had stronger walls. Far too many of our most popular pastors, authors, and Christian conference speakers on the planet today, men and women, sound like Eden. Their trees are magnificent and they're known the world over, and millions consume their books and podcasts as if God himself was speaking from Eden. But from what I've read and heard, all they're doing is telling us what self-help books tell us from any bookshop. They keep telling us that we can be special, that we are magnificent, that we can rise above the ashes, that we are and we are and we are. Jesus hardly gets a mention, and when he does, it's all tangential. I often read the titles of books and look at the contents and wonder how these would help brothers and sisters I've spoken with, sat with, prayed with and prayed for, who live in the slums of Kibera, Kampala and Santa Marta on the north coast of Colombia. With each book that is produced by these people, readers and listeners are led one step away from Christ and the tree and his tree, which did not touch the sky. His tree was not magnificent. And it was not beautiful. 5 times in the New Testament, we are told Jesus died on a tree. And the word tree, each of these 5 times, is a particular word. It is used only of dead timber. constructed as an implement of torture for the excruciating purpose of crucifixion. His tree did not touch heaven. It was driven as a stake into the earth. To walk with Jesus is not to build your self-esteem. To walk with Jesus is to walk on your knees. It's to humble yourself before the God who was humiliated on his tree. And here's the kicker. For the proud, for those who refuse to humble themselves before the humiliated Christ, for those who are like Nebuchadnezzar, a fall is coming much worse than Nebuchadnezzar's fall. At the end of the scriptures in Revelation 18 and 19, we're told about the Babylon, filled with people who refuse to bow their knee to the humiliated Christ. The Christ who humbled himself on earth will then be their judge, and he will declare them not gods, and he will send them to hell. This has deeply disturbed me. Though all is not lost, Nebuchadnezzar tells us at the end in verse 34, at the end of the seven periods of time, I raised my eyes to heaven, not my hand. I raised my eyes and my sanity was restored. And then I prayed. I praised the Most High. I honored and glorified him who lives forever. His dominion is forever. His kingdom endures from generation to generation. I submit myself to him. You see, there is hope for any and all who would humble themselves before the Christ who died on the tree. I said the New Testament talks five times of Jesus and his tree. There is one more verse in the New Testament that speaks of the tree, but not with Jesus hanging on it. It speaks of it as the life-giving tree. At the last chapter of the Bible, on each side of the river is the tree, the dead tree. But it's a tree of life. It produces fruit and yields the fruit every month of the year, and its leaves are for the healing of the nations. At Jesus' tree, people find entry into God's Eden, where at the end of time we will see Christ face to face, and the vulnerable will be cared for, because Eden's hallmarks of righteousness and justice and mercy and joy will be experienced by all who live in Christ's heaven. None will go hungry. None will be victims of domestic violence. None will be victims of sexual harassment or slavery or exploitation. Rather, we will all live and bask in the wonder of the humble one who died on his tree, that we might be forgiven, and so that we might know that we are loved, which is far more significant, far more substantial than trying to build your own self-esteem. Friends, all of this, all that I have said, lies behind the mission of this church and has done for 215 years now. All of this lies behind our ministries to children and youth and young adults, seniors, Jesus Club, and raising up interns. All of this lies behind and influences our partnerships with Compassion, international teams, Anglicare, and I hope next year with International Justice Ministries as we lend our shoulder to ending slavery in this century. It lies behind our involvement with Christmas in the Hills, where we hope 7,000 people will turn up this year. And just parenthetically, we need help with Blue Army. And so if you can smile and you can wear a blue t-shirt, we'd love to hear from you. Please let me know. It lies behind our preaching, our discipleship, our City of Light ministry. It lies behind our vision to gather with all the Anglican churches in the hills and do a mission in 2020 under the banner of Jesus Is, where we want to do large events, small events, Matthew parties. We want to gather and pray to Jesus and talk to him first about lost people before we talk to lost people about him. All of this that I've talked about tonight lies behind why we turf that culvert over there so that more people can park here, particularly at 10 o'clock, and hear about Jesus. That's why we want to extend the building, because at 10 o'clock we need more seats. All of this lies behind all of that. And I want to add just one more final thought, really. in the process of telling people about Jesus, we want to be like Daniel. Not like the 21st century Christianized version of Nebuchadnezzar. We want to be like Daniel, who when King Nebuchadnezzar told him the dream, have a look at verse 19, chapter 4, verse 19. Daniel was greatly perplexed for a time, and his thoughts terrified him. We might expect it to say Daniel did a victory punch in the air, a punch the sky, because the man who torched his homeland was about to be done in by God. We might expect Daniel not to be terrified but excited that Nebuchadnezzar was going to get his just desserts. But no, Daniel is mortified and terrified. And then in verse 27, he begs Nebuchadnezzar to repent. You see, how we respond to another person's pain or their fall from grace reveals more about us than it does about them. So how'd you go with Luke Foley's fall from grace last week? Like, did you celebrate because he's a Labor guy? And so, as to not be accused of discrimination, how did you go when Malcolm Turnbull fell or was shafted? Did you do a victory dance because you vote green? Sometimes this smug satisfaction extends to well-known church figures like Rick Warren. Rick Warren leads a large church in California. When his son suicided, people in the church, hopefully not his, but people in the broader church gloated, saying, because he taught what he taught, because he prayed with presidents that he prayed with, and because he has book sales that are phenomenal, that's why his son died. Daniel was so different. He knew Nebuchadnezzar. He knew his God. He wanted Nebuchadnezzar to get to know God. And so we want to prepare ourselves for 2020 by gathering with the other churches next year to pray and to prepare ourselves that we might be like Daniel. Because we want to build a real Eden, the genuine thing. We want all people, whether they're single, married or singled again, whether they're black, white or coloured, whether they're same-sex attracted, straight, intersex or trans. We want anyone with human skin on them to come to know Jesus. We want them to come via the dead tree that brings life. And so tonight, it is just possible that we might join everyone else at St. Paul's and say, we've seen how extraordinarily, extravagantly generous our God is. We've seen the gifts he's placed in our hands of time and talents and treasures. We see the world in which we live. We see it and are so disturbed. We might just say as a church, enough. We could, if we wanted to, if we were moved by the Spirit of Christ, we could fill those five buckets to overflowing. And maybe, just maybe, we might introduce thousands of people to Christ in 2020, if not before. Maybe we will hear testimonies like Nebuchadnezzar's, who says in verse 37, now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and exalt and glorify the King of heaven, because everything he does is right and all his ways are just. And those who walk in pride, he will humble. Maybe then, the deep disturbance will give way to joy as we see lives radically transformed, as people in our nation come to the Christ who bore the shame and the humiliation of our sin, that we might be exalted with him to sit with him in Eden. Maybe.